What is going on, Law Nation? Welcome to the Passive Income Attorney Podcast, your favorite place for learning about the world of alternative passive investments so that you can have more freedom, flexibility, and fun. We have a great show for you today, but if you're ready to start kicking that billable hour to the curb, go to attorneybydesign.com to download the Freedom Blueprint, which will also get you access to opportunities to partner with us on one of our next passive real estate investments. We'd love to get you on board and help you on your way to financial freedom. All right, let's have a chat today about diversification. Now, some people nowadays will tell you diversification is bad, that you should actually focus on one thing, get really good at it, and focus on that. Other people will tell you you need to diversify. Most people will tell you that. But here's the thing. A lot of people go out there and, you know, you'll hear these gurus talk about their magic pill. And when I say magic pill, I mean, you know, maybe this guru says you have to invest in Airbnbs. If you don't invest in Airbnbs, you're missing the money train. You're going to miss out. Or you have to invest in this cryptocurrency right now, or you're going to miss out. You're never going to make money unless you invest with me right now. Even syndications, there's a lot of those folks out there. I know that we preach about real estate syndications quite a bit on this show, which I do love those investments. But, you know, it's not the end all be all. We need diversification across different types of passive investments and even active investments if you have more time that you're willing to put forth. And on today's show, our guest, Paul Martinchuk, is a really good friend of mine. We go way back, used to do syndications together. Now Paul has moved on to a lot of different interesting investments. He is a high-powered, highly paid W-2 earner executive who also finds the time to invest passively as well as actively in a lot of different investment spaces, including single family, vacation rentals, real estate syndications, and in the energy sector as well. So let's dive right in.
This is the Passive Income Attorney Podcast, where you'll discover the secrets and strategies of the ultra wealthy on how they build streams of passive income to give them the freedom we all want. Attorney Seth Bradley will help you end the cycle of trading your time for money so you can make money while you sleep. Start living the good life on your own terms. Now, here's your host, Seth Bradley.
Paul, what's going on, brother? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Seth, it is great to see you. Great to be on.
Yeah, super excited to have one of my good friends on here. This is awesome. He's got a lot of great things to share. But Paul, why don't you just jump right in, man? Tell us a little bit about your background, your story, your family. Take it as far back as you want to.
Absolutely. Happy to be on. My name is Paul Martinchuk. I am a family man. I am fully employed and I have a high earning job. And I am also an investor and have been an investor for quite some time. Let me share a couple of slides because I think that'll bring out my background a little bit more. All right. So I should be sharing. And here we go. First and foremost, family man. Fun fact about myself is I met my wife at church. That's pretty rare nowadays, huh? We love to have fun. Family values are important to us. We live in Southern California, and I'm a first generation American. So I guess that means I work hard, Seth, right?
That's right.
And then from an educational background and professional and investment background, UCLA undergrad, Berkeley and Columbia joint MBA, corporate experience in finance across Deloitte and various healthcare organizations. And Seth, I don't know if I shared with you, but I'm actually joining a technology company as a CFO that has a high potential of being a unicorn. Fantastic opportunity. So I love my W-2 and have high conviction that there'll be a nice exit at some point in time in the future. But I think for your listeners, most importantly, what's my investment experience? Well, let me share. I've done single family rentals. I flipped some homes with my wife. We invested into apartments. We actually syndicated, sponsored more than a dozen deals. We private money lent like no others. We invested into equities, did convertible notes, did actually quite a bit of venture capital investing. So some really hot deals you might have heard about we've been on and continue to be on. This is an area of interest of ours. And most recently, over the last couple of years, we've been doing a lot of business investment. Why? Because that is an area where we are able to not only have great cash flow, but also incredible tax savings. And that is something that might be of interest to your listeners. And lastly, with respect to my background, we recently hired some coaches who are just absolutely phenomenal, who helped us craft our vision statement. So what is my vision statement? Why am I sharing with you and your listeners? Because really, my vision, my goal in life is to experience freedom, fulfillment, and growth through achieving financial independence and through serving others, and to empower those around us through knowledge and wisdom to live an abundant life. And I feel that we're doing that now. Is that sufficient, Seth?
That is perfect, man. I love it. Love what you put together there. I love the vision statement. I love that you hired coaches. That's one thing we preach all the time. You know, try to find help. If there's something you want to do or you want to improve in your life, you can find someone that can show you the way, and you don't have to spin your wheels and try to piece everything together. We certainly didn't learn these things from traditional schooling. So we have to go out and find mentors and coaches that can teach us about financial education and living a more fulfilled and fun and flexible life.
We stumbled on these coaches, the Freemans, the relationship coaches, actually, and they are amazing. That was really the best, I would say, decision of 2021 was hiring them as coaches. And the way to think about that is usually there's premarital counseling and divorce counseling and nothing in between. And these guys are, number one, amazing in communication, but number two, also really great with communication and visions that span not only in focus on the relationships, but also much, much, much more broadly. That's my plug for them. I get no kickbacks, by the way.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's funny that you pointed that out, that there's nobody in the middle. It's always at the beginning and the end and nothing in the middle. And going back to, you know, your diversification, man, I love that as well. You know, a lot of people nowadays, if you listen to all the gurus, they're always just preaching their product and that's it. Now, we do talk about syndications a lot on this show, but, you know, I invest in crypto and startups and real estate across residential and commercial and all kinds of different things similar to yourself. Why do you think it's important to diversify rather than, you know, prey on that magic pill and hope that one thing, whether it's, you know, crypto, you know, or a syndication or something like that is going to save you and be the one thing that's going to take you to financial freedom?
You know, probably multiple reasons. One is, the market is cyclical. Whichever market you're in, let's say a real estate, and I love real estate. I've been in real estate for quite some time, but the real estate market is cyclical, and it is cyclical within the subsegments of real estate. So for example, multifamily might be really hot during a particular time period, and then it might not be so hot, right? So diversification is important from a cyclicality perspective, I think, number one. Number two, from a sponsorship perspective, you might be a part of a mastermind, and that's all you know. Well, who's to say that is the most efficient mastermind? I've had some fantastic experiences with some sponsors, and with other sponsors, I've had horrific experience. Number three, really the risk to effort or the risk reward ratios are different in different asset classes. So for example, private money loans have a completely different risk reward characteristic from cryptocurrency, and you need to understand those. And so I was in many masterminds, and my issue with some of the masterminds is that whatever the mastermind focuses on seems to be like the greatest thing on earth. But the fact of the matter is, for high earning professionals like you and me, that is just not the case. We don't need just one thing. We need advice and counsel across multiple areas. So for example, what I learned earlier on is I needed counsel on multiple types of asset classes and investments. Why? Because at different points in time, I might need to do private money loans or multifamily or crypto or venture capital. I've invested a lot into startups, right? Then I also learned that at some point in time, I really need to focus on taxes, because that's even a bigger bang for the buck than investments. And then lastly, asset protection. And so to answer your question, I think diversification is incredible and needed for all of those factors: market fluctuations, diversification from sponsorship, and just really different trajectories and different goals that someone might have. And actually, as a matter of fact, Seth, I'll probably be starting a mastermind here in the next few months that focuses on all of those and is asset agnostic, but is really about teaching people and sharing all of the information across all of the lines.
Love that, man. Love that. Rewinding a little bit, when did you, because you are a highly paid W-2 earner and you have been for a while, what made you think like, hey, I've got to diversify outside of this? I do have a great active income, but I need something else. I need to, you know, start looking at alternative investments. What kind of aha moment did you have at any point in time?
You know, have you ever ridden a bicycle up the hill and then the hill gets steeper, Seth? I had an experience that reminded me of that. I was a director at a Fortune, 200 company, have been working hard as a first generation, getting those raises and so forth. But what I mean by my bicycle and a climb in the hill is that, you know, family was there. And the more I made, I felt that my expenses were getting higher. And I just felt that this traditional approach of 401k investing and relying solely on my W-2 wasn't going to get me there. I had an aha moment. I distinctly remember a very clear one, sitting in my office and thinking, look, I'm in my mid-30s. I have a great paying job, but something might happen to me. This is not going to look well. And that started the journey of self-discovery, journey of reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, journey of reading Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright, Masterminds podcast to really learn, absorb, and got me to this point where I'm very diversified, have multiple income streams, pay very low in taxes, by the way. That might be of interest to your listeners.
Yeah, for sure. We're definitely going to jump into the tax portion a little bit later. And what you mentioned before about, sure, you start making more money, but you start spending more money. Your lifestyle expenses go up as you make more money. We call that the golden handcuffs, because you end up with big bills.
Yes.
So you make a lot of money, you have a lot of big bills, and then you're stuck to a job that is not fulfilling for yourself. And you've got to figure out a way to make yourself happy. And then sometimes it doesn't work out. So a lot of people come to that aha moment. I'm glad that you found yours and you're thriving right now. So let's jump into the taxes, man. So as a highly paid W-2, you don't pay any taxes?
I'm not going to say I don't pay any taxes. I'll say that I don't pay any federal taxes. I do live in the state of California, and you can't avoid all of those in the state of California. So I don't pay federal taxes. And yes, I do live in the state of California.
That's awesome. Why don't you share with the audience a little bit how you are able to save yourself from these high taxes, even as a highly paid W-2, because that can be difficult.
Yes. And it took a long time to get to this level. Not because it's not available to anyone, but frankly, because the information was difficult to find. So first, let me tell you what I'm not doing, which you probably have heard on some of your podcasts or from some of your speakers. So first and foremost, I'm not doing this via real estate investments. I'm not claiming real estate professional. Again, I'm not claiming real estate professional. And if anyone is listening and you're a doctor or a lawyer or any other high-paid professional and your CPA is going to advise you to do that, and it's not through your spouse, run, number one, because I had a CPA like that who gave me the same advice, but that is just not reality. And then two, if you are still not convinced, please reach out to me or to Seth. I will be happy to refer you to an attorney who has defended dozens and dozens of professionals who claimed real estate professional status and who were working, and he would be able to give you advice on that matter. So that's not what I'm doing. So what am I doing? And I would say there's probably four categories, and I'm doing the last two of them. So first of all, you all probably have heard of conservation easements. That is an approach. There is some hair to that, but that certainly is a strategy. And even though there is risk associated with conservation easements, it should not be discarded. There is valid reasons to do conservation easements, but we're not going to talk about that today. Number one. Number two, there are fee simple interest. Fee simple interest is basically like a stepbrother of conservation easements. There's less risk there, but essentially it works in a very similar manner. I'm not going to get into the details, but again, it's another valid strategy. So that's number two. Number three, business investments into businesses that have high level of depreciation. That is something that I was doing last year and helped me not pay taxes. What does that look like? Well, let me give you an example. Let's say Seth invests or buys a number of vending machines. Well, clearly those are depreciable. And the way that the tax law is structured, all of the bonus depreciation, the entire investment could be taken as a deduction in year one. So business investments is number three. And before I go to number four, you should know that if your strategy is going to be business investments, there are some rules. In order to have this offset your income, one would need to show material participation. Now, material participation in these businesses is substantially easier to obtain and prove versus a real estate professional status. Let me just give you an example. My wife, in order to prove her material participation, basically only needs to work 100 hours per year. That's it. But I won't get into the rest of the details. So number three is investments into businesses with equipment that could be depreciated, such as vending machines, for example. Oh, and by the way, you could lever that up. So Seth, you could invest $100,000, lever that up, and have a full value of those machines of $400,000, and then that is what gets to offset your income. So that's number three. And then lastly, last kind of fourth category that I'll touch on today is basically energy-related investments. So the thought process is similar to business investments. Invest into basically equipment, but in the energy space. And from a structural perspective, it works in a similar manner. It is the depreciation from that equipment that is used to offset your taxes. But because the equipment lives in the industry vertical, in the energy vertical, the energy has its own section in the tax codes and it gets the most preferential treatment. So basically no material participation needs to be proven. And there's some other nuances that we can discuss, but frankly, I just write the check. As long as I'm a GP in some sort of an equipment business, then the offsets can be taken. And so just so that I could drive that point home, Seth, here is what my tax return looks like for 2019. I just want to share one page. So look at that. That first line item is my adjusted gross income. During this time, I was working as a chief financial officer for an area of Kaiser Permanente.
That's incredible. That number, Seth? Yeah, and we'll read that off. So that number says negative $120,244 in 2019 in taxes.
Yes. So as a highly paid professional, my adjusted gross income for 2019 was negative $120,000. Seth, what amount of tax do you pay on the negative income?
Zero.
He was showing me zero. That's right. So this is 2019. Here is 2020. 2020, my adjusted negative gross income is showing at negative $280,000. So it's real. It's doable. You just need to have access to the right advisors and the right opportunities. And Seth, I hope that you share with your audience my email and contact information. I'd be happy to share who I work with and what have you, because I found that as I continue to grow, I continue to get access to more and more vetted sponsors who are effective. And like I said, I'd be happy to share with your audience.
Absolutely, man.
So that's the theory, right? That's the theory. How this actually works, just to give you a little bit more insight into this, is whether it's a business investment like vending machines, or whether we're talking about energy related equipment. Let's say I make a $100,000 investment, number one. Number two, there is additional leverage. For simplicity's sake, let's say there's 50% leverage. So basically what that means is I'm buying a piece of equipment for $200,000 or so. Of course, there is a cash flow element to that equipment. I don't invest just for the sake of getting a tax write-off. That's why I'm not pursuing conservation easements and fee simple interest, because there's no cash flow there. Here there's cash flow. So for my investment, first of all, I get good cash flow, right? And then second of all, I get to offset my income, not just with the cash that I put in, but with the entire post-leveraged amount in my example with $200,000. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Wow. Wow. What other business investments do you invest in? Do you actually do vending machines? Do you use that as an example, or is that just a prime example?
I did do vending machines last year. Yes, I did do vending machines. Yeah, absolutely. To answer a question, I think number one, we do it. Number two, what I found to be really the most effective tool are these CO2 scrubber machines. And so what I'm displaying now on the screen is what my wife and I made a very substantial investment in 2021, and we're gearing up to do another one in 2022. So let me just briefly tell you why this has been just such a game changer and no-brainer for us. By the way, Seth, when I first looked at these machines, what you're seeing in the screen, I had a similar reaction. I kind of recoiled back and like, what the heck is this? Like, should I really be even interested in this, right? Seth is smiling and laughing. But to answer your question, what is this? What am I investing into? What these tanks are that you're looking at are CO2 scrubber machines. So what that means is when gas comes out of the ground, it has a bunch of impurities in it. And before it makes it to your stove, all those impurities need to be taken out. So what this machine does is two things. Number one, it extracts those impurities, and there's a cash flow associated with that. Basically, the company gets paid for extracting the CO2, number one. And then number two, once that CO2 is extracted and captured in the solvent, that solvent is injected into the ground to enhance oil recovery. So there's a cash flow associated with that. So basically, why this has been a no-brainer for me is two reasons. The cash flow, frankly, that this operator is offering right now, or was offering this year, has been very strong. For every $100,000 investment that I would make, the preferred return was $10,000 per quarter for 7 years. Let me repeat that. $10,000 per quarter for 7 years. So let's do the math. $10,000 per quarter means $40,000 per year, right, Seth? So if I invest $100,000, I get $40,000 for 7 years. That's $280,000 for 7 years. So on its face value, to me, that seems compelling. So I'm interested just from a cash flow characteristic, number one, right? But number two, more importantly, this happens to be in the energy space, and I don't need to prove any sort of hours. I don't need to do anything. Just by writing a $100,000 check, I get to offset $200,000 of my income. And that is how I get into this negative territory, right? Imagine if I write a check for $200,000, well, all of a sudden I'm offsetting $400,000 of my income, right? If you write a check for $300,000, I'm offsetting $600,000 of your income. That is how I get that. And then from a risk perspective, notice that this company is not focused on mining anything or extracting oil or extracting gas. Basically, the analogy here is like selling picks and jeans to the gold miners. They're just in the middle. They're providing a service to the extractors. You will also notice that these machines are pretty small. They're pretty mobile. And the last thing I'll say is that the operator, they have a revenue share, frankly, that is greater than the investor. And so what that means is for every $10 of revenue that this company generates, depending on the life of the equipment, they get to keep anywhere from 35 to 65% of that revenue. What does that mean, or why I'm excited about that, right? Because some of you might say, well, geez, you're giving away too much revenue to the operator. You know, I take the opposing view and I say, no, for me, that's safety. Why? Because if more than 50% of revenue goes back to the operator, you better believe that they're incentivized to ensure that these machines are in appropriate places and they're working. So I'm sorry if that was too much detail, but as you can tell, you know, I'm pretty excited about this particular sponsor and investment, and that's why I want to gear up and do another one next year. And so if you guys are interested, please let me know, because I'd love to bring you into this deal as well.
That's awesome, man. It's awesome. Man, those returns that you were putting out there sound incredible, man. So just to be clear, because it's in the energy sector, those paper losses, you can offset those against your active income, not just your passive income.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. Because it's not real estate, you can offset versus your active income. And if your CPA is not comfortable with it, again, feel free to reach out to Seth or me. Your network is your net worth. I've accumulated a number of CPAs who have are comfortable and who have developed the strategy. And just as an aside, if you guys have heard of the book Tax-Free Wealth written by Tom Wheelwright, which is one of the Rich Dad Poor Dad series, Tom sold his practice to Tim Gertz and three other partners. I personally know Tim Gertz. Tim Gertz is a tax partner who actually developed the strategy for this investment for CETA. And so the only reason I share that with you, Seth, is to say that the strategy for this has been developed really by some of the top minds, by some of the minds that you guys probably heard and have read from. And yes, it is legitimate. You can offset your W-2 income from the depreciation that comes from energy-related equipment.
Yeah, and I love this as well because, like you said, there's a little bit of risk off the table because it's not directly investing in, let's say, oil or directly investing in gas or investing in the equipment that has to do with the oil and the gas, rather than, you know, something like oil is very unpredictable. You can have a really high upside, but you can also have a very low downside. So, you know, this takes a little bit of the risk off the table. So I like that approach and still being able to capture those tax benefits that you are garnered from the energy industry.
Absolutely. And I have certainly done and looked at those direct investments into oil and gas, and those work, but I love this investment for the same matter. There is no spot price risk. I'm just basically investing into an equipment and not into the underlying asset. And so for some of you high-paying professionals, here is a real example. Let's say you and your spouse potentially make $400,000. If you invest, like me, in $100,000 increments, let's say you invest $100,000. What happens to your AGI? It goes from 400 down to 200. That's literally what happens. Okay? Then what happens is the tax bracket that you fall into, a 400K Marriott filing jointly would be in a 32% bracket. And with a $200,000 AGI, Marriott filing jointly would be in a 24% tax bracket. So your federal tax liability, I'm not talking about states, federal tax liability would be 128 grand if you do nothing. And it would be $48,000 if you write a check for this investment, right? That's a difference of $80,000. So Seth, this is why I did it, why I'm so excited, because think about it. If I write a $100,000 check, I get an immediate $80,000 savings. So all this thing needs to do for me to break even is just make 20 grand. And they're offering 40 for the next 7 years, right? And you know, clearly I have high conviction, but to me, that seems like a very lopsided risk reward ratio, very lopsided risk reward ratio, right? That's why, you know, when I look around and survey the land, to me, that this seems like a pretty darn good bet. Not to say that there's not a lot of other gas and oil. I'm also considering some of those investments as well.
Yeah. Yeah. When you take into account those tax benefits, you know, you've already made a lot of your money back regardless of how the asset performs. What are some of the risks associated with an investment like this particular one?
Yeah, great question. So the key risks is basically really the sponsorship or the operator risk, because really for all intents and purposes, I'm along for the ride with this company, CETA, right? So if they do great, we succeed. If they go under, well, that really is the biggest risk. And that's number one. And I'll get back to that risk in a second. There are some macro risks, and it would be irresponsible for me not to say that. But given where we are in our society in administration, this investment is viewed as really almost like a clean energy investment. Why? Because it's helping extract CO2 from natural gas streams. So there's public opinion that's a tailwind, that's positive, and policy is policy as well. And by the way, the CEO of this company actually sits on the advisory council in Washington, D.C. And to go back to the first risk, the operator risk, I've done a ton of diligence myself. I mean, you saw the pictures of me visiting the facilities and what have you, and have ultimately gotten comfortable with it. Why? Because this company has a contract with really one of the largest oil and gas companies in the world. I'd say that you'd know it. We see their gas stations in multiple corners that have refineries. And As of today, they have deployed, CETA has deployed less than 100 machines. And over the next 5 years, the documented demand or the contractual demand is north of 400 machines. So basically the demand is out there. The operator is saying, give us more. We're happy to deploy 400. And we're talking about one operator so far, one oil and gas company, and there's clearly so many more here in the United States. So that's how I've gotten comfortable with those two risks.
I like it. I like it, man. I mean, that's just even with a real estate deal. I mean, your biggest risks are with the sponsorship team, whether or not they can perform. And also, you know, on the backside, you're worried about, you know, some sort of a financing risk as well if the economy tanks or something like that. But again, it goes back to the sponsorship team.
Yeah, and just two additional thoughts there. This is not just one guy in Texas running this operation. When I was out there, I got to meet the team. We're talking about a large team of, you know, number one, leaders, executives, though, you know, I would say the executive, this team does not look like your standard Fortune 100 executive. They're not wearing suit and tie. They're not even dressed like I am. But the team is there, right? Number one, let me tell you. And then also the operating team, the people who are actually making, building, operating this machinery, they're certainly there. So I just wanted to highlight that. And then completely separate but related, also I want to speak to your audience and say, hey, please vet your sponsors. I had an example where I was a part of a mastermind. I trusted the mastermind leader, you know, and I got coupled up with a sponsor, and it turned out that, you know, the sponsor wasn't that great. I made the assumption that he was going to vet the sponsor because the sponsor was also in his mastermind, but that wasn't the case. So please, please, please vet the sponsors, even if both of you happen to be in the same mastermind or what have you.
Always, always vet the sponsor. So going back to the deals, how are those deals structured? Are they structured like syndications, or are they joint ventures, or how are you as an investor actually brought into the deal?
Yes, so they are sponsored as syndications. There is a private placement memorandum for the deals, for these particular deals that I have done with CETA. I was not the sponsor, but just to give you an example, Mauricio was the attorney drafting the PPM. You might know Mauricio through some of your syndication work.
Yeah.
And awesome. So that in a nutshell, similar to a syndication, there's units that are offered typically in $100,000 increments, and investors are able to pick them up. As an FYI, each of those machines, even though they don't look massive, they cost approximately $1.5 million to build and produce. So they're not cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you able to balance your successful W-2 career and all these different investments that you have going on? I think a lot of listeners out there are thinking, man, I don't have time to even learn about these things. How are you able to do it, Paul?
You know, if you ask me who won football or basketball, I would have no idea. So I prioritize, and I made a choice to prioritize this really over a lot of different things. You know, I prioritize, of course, family. I prioritize faith above this, but I prioritize this over other types of, you know, hobbies. Like I said, just the other day, I was watching something about Kobe Bryant, and for the first time learning something about Kobe. And, you know, as we all know, he's not been with us for quite some time. And I simply just say that I prioritize, number one. Number two, I plan. So for example, after I hang up with you, we're going to jump on the plane with my wife and go to Arizona to a high-powered Access Mastermind, right? So plan. And then three, get help. And what I mean by that is coaching. We've hired coaches. They help us, you know, structure our thinking, our approach, our vision, our goals. And, you know, number four, as a result of that, my wife actually and I, we sit down every week, or at least we try to every week, and we reflect on our goals. We check the box. Did we do this like we said we would? Did we achieve this, you know, in our relationship, but also did we achieve this in our financial and our business goals? That's how I do it. How do you do it, by the way?
Paul, you're my hero, man. I love that you've involved your wife as well. You guys are a team. You do masterminds together, you invest together, you talk about your goals, both relationship and business-wise together. That's awesome, man. I think a lot of listeners out there are thinking the same thing, like, wow, how do you do it? How do you involve your significant other with your business and your life? A lot of people kind of keep those two things separate, but really it should be one cohesive thing. You're in it together.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And I think maybe in the first few years of me pursuing this, I kept it very separate. And to be honest with you, our relationship suffered because by definition, it was more points of separation. And then when we really came together over the past, you know, year or so to develop our family vision, and you saw that in my family vision, both of us are looking to achieve financial freedom, and then also giving to others is important to both of us. So as we aligned on that, then it just became an outpouring of that vision statement that, yes, like Grant Cardone says, we should do what other people won't do for the next couple of years so that we're in the position to have that freedom. It doesn't mean I'm going to stop working, right? Because as a CFO of a unicorn company, I don't want to start working, right? I'm not one of those guys who's like, I want out in 2 years. No, with equity participation, I don't want out in 2 years, right? It's like, think about it. Imagine if you were part of Amazon or Uber before it was Uber or Amazon, right? You want to ride it out. So I want to be there. But at the same time, it's important to have the joint approach.
Yeah, I love it, man. All right, before we jump into the Freedom Forward, you have one last golden nugget for our listeners?
Yes, golden nugget. I would say, get help. And I mean that in the best possible manner. Get help. Not that you need help, but seek and get help. And what I mean by that is get a coach, right? Join a mastermind, pay for it. It's okay to ask and to get help because none of us got to where we got on our own. Seth, you're an attorney. You got help. You got educated. Somebody taught you. Somebody showed me the way. I am investing into venture capital, into crypto, in these various energy sectors because somebody showed me. They helped me. I didn't figure this out by myself. Neither do I want to, right? So when I say get help, I mean it. It's easy to remember. There is no shame in it. Please pay for the help because it is worth it every step of the way. That's your first nugget. The second nugget is, reach out to me and ask me how to get on these CETA deals. I'd be happy to help you.
Awesome. Awesome, man. All right, let's jump into the Freedom Four.
It's time for the Freedom Four.
What's the best thing you do to keep your mind and body healthy?
Good one. I think of what is the absolute truth. That's number one. And then number two, I meditate and reflect. It's so easy to get swayed by this world and to have ups and downs emotionally and to feel sometimes like you're on top of the world and then other times feel like you're nothing, like you're a loser, right? And you at those times, you got to reflect on what are the absolute truths that you know about the world, about yourself. And so for me, I read the scriptures, I meditate also, and I reflect. That's what I do.
That's perfect, man. Yeah, you've got to find those moments of silence, right? Whether it's meditating or praying or reflecting, whatever it is, you need to give yourself some moments each and every day to slow down and just kind of think and breathe and figure out what's going on in your head rather than just always reacting to a quick moving world.
Absolutely.
With all your success, what is one limiting belief that you've crushed along the way and how did you get past it?
Not being good enough. We all have voices, and depending on our upbringing, those voices might be different. I think for me, that was the voice, not being good enough. And I think coaching and my wife and various reflections have helped me get through that. And frankly, just reflecting on some of the slides that I'm sharing with you, I think crushed it. But it is still there. It is something that each of us has to work with, whatever that is in their mind.
Love it, man. Love it. What's one actionable step our listeners can do right now to start creating more freedom?
Two things. One, make sure you have a fantastic CPA. Tim Gertz, for example, is one of them. Seth Peabody is another one. Shoot me an email. I'd be happy to recommend you one. So that's step one. Make sure, because your CPA is so crucial. And in my view and opinion, most CPAs and even most of the CPAs that are out there doing podcasts are not worth their dime. Two, reach out to me. I think I'd be happy to share my wisdom, what I'm investing in, da-da-da. That's the other second actionable line items. And so far, all the people that have reached out never gotten any negative feedback.
Awesome, man. How has passive income made your life better?
It has provided that freedom, that financial freedom. It has allowed me not to worry so much and really have a sense of a freedom that I can work if I want to work, but I can choose not to. That really is at the end of the day what it comes down to, and ultimately that's freedom.
Awesome. That's perfect, man. Paul, it's been great catching up with you today, man. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
My LinkedIn profile, so just look me up at paulmartinchuk.com. And the mastermind that I'm starting has a website. It's still under development, but it's called cardaaccess.com. cardaaccess.com. By the time you post this, it might be already live. But Paul Martinchuk at LinkedIn.
All right, Paul. Appreciate it, man. Talk soon.
Thank you, Seth. Appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Martinchuk, my really good friend. Again, we go back way back when I just started getting into commercial real estate syndications. Paul was already in the investment space and showed me the ropes. And he has since moved on to many different things, including those CO2 scrubbers that we talked about in this episode. If you're interested in investing in that space, feel free to reach out to Paul. I'll put all of his contact info in the show notes. I know that I'm going to take a look at that myself. It seems like a really good investment, especially for those folks out there who have a highly paid W-2 job that they need to find something that they can offset their active income, not just their passive income, with a paper loss that you might be able to generate from that sort of investment. Major key today, man, you never know what kind of investments are out there. I mean, I learned about those CO2 scrubbers today. That was new to me. I was exploring certain things in the energy sector, but nothing that's kind of ancillary to the energy sector like that. And that's what you need to be aware of. That's why you need to educate yourself, get out there, network with folks that are already doing what you want to do, perhaps get a coach, get a mentor, join a mastermind. Just see what's out there. You never know when you're going to find that next really cool, really interesting passive investment opportunity that will take you to the next level and help you build that investing empire and eventually let you either scale back or walk away from your job if you so choose. All right, guys, if you're ready to start building your passive investing empire and you're interested in partnering with us on our next passive real estate deal, go to passiveincomeattorney.com and join our Esquire Passive Investor Club. All right, folks, until next time, enjoy the journey.
Thank you for listening to the Passive Income Attorney Podcast with Seth Bradley. Do you want more ideas on how to generate multiple streams of passive income? Then jump over to passiveincomeattorney.com for show notes and